You have tuned in to an encore presentation of Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening. Lasting longer at night, and it's just a little bit of excellent news for Bellingham. We're all sharing in the joy of having a little bit of sun this week. So another thing that I want to talk about, we are going to get into some really good news and some really intense news about our legislature and the future or lack thereof of education in Washington State. But I do want to take a moment because Dave and I went to an interfaith service out at the Sikh temple, the Guru Nanak Guru Sikh, and it was organized by County Councilman Satpal Singh and featured Noemi Bon.
And it was very excellent. There was representatives from a lot of local faith groups, including several Lutherans and Wiccans and Zen Buddhists, and it was very well attended. They packed the place, and It was really fantastic. It was really, really excellent, and I hope they do more.
They packed the room. They packed the overflow room, and there was standing room only. And people from all walks of life, Councilman Lilliquist, Mayor Kelly Linville, and like you said, people from all backgrounds. There was a Muslim imam who spoke, and people from all different faiths. But the reason that I bring it up is because it's been hard for many people who are feeling sort of overwhelmed or hopeless or targeted in our community. And that this doesn't take away, this isn't just a feel-good moment that erases everything. But that being said, seeing that many people in our community come out and say, we support our Sikh community, we support our Jewish community, we want to hear from one of the last Holocaust survivors alive, and also honored Marion Bedell, who took action when the Sikh temple was attacked right after 9/11.
Right. It also came 10 years after the 100th anniversary of the expulsion of Sikhs from the city of Bellingham. And so it was there was a memorial a decade ago trying to be accountable for that particular moment. 10 years later, a more celebratory event celebrating the Sikhs in our community.
So thank you, Councilman Satpal Singh Sidhu, and the entire Sikh community, and I invite you to also step up, whoever and wherever you are. Now, getting into some more intense news, well, let's turn to our Washington State Legislature and what's happening with the future of education, Dave.
All right, so at about this time last year, the state legislature recognized that they needed to, and they were informed that they needed to account for more of teacher salary than they were. And right now, we have this statewide ridiculous levy system where levies are passed in local municipalities to pay for a lot of, you know, side things, but also a big chunk of teacher salaries. And the state had to step up and actually pay their teachers, and so they put a commission together, and that commission met earlier this week, and it was really, really disappointing. It was an abject mess. They didn't pass anything. The state Republicans who were on the commission showed up with no recommendation, just a couple of PowerPoint slides of principles. And it really was kind of reminiscent of when you're in school and you have a group project and you have that one person who shows up and obviously forgot to do anything and threw something together at the last minute. This commission met for 7 months and they came up with nothing. And one of the members, and her name escapes me now because I'm getting a little worked up, but one of the members on the Republican side said, well, we need more information, which was the point. It was the whole point of the entire exercise, and they wasted 7 months. And now there's been no progress. There is nothing. So instead of being able to reconcile two plans, the commission accomplished nothing because half of the members didn't participate. And so now it's going to go to the legislature, and we still have, there is a plan in place. There's Inslee's budget, which he has put forward, and there's also the Democratic members of the commission's proposal, which was well done. It, you know, they put up options. They put what every, you know, individual thing was likely to cost. And so there is some path forward, but we've got a session that is supposed to end in March. And we don't have a very good head start on getting education reform fixed.
So it's a short session this
right.
Year.
But Dave, aren't we also looking? I was talking to the Office of Public Instruction, the Superintendent of Public Instruction, back in the fall, and we seem to be looking at something they call the levy cliff. Can you comment on that, or do you know what I'm talking about the levy cliff? Essentially, these levy funds, these local levy funds, are going to be constricted unless the legislature acts. So not only are we looking at a situation where nothing happens, we're looking at a situation where catastrophe happens if they don't get their act together.
And who's constricting the levies? Is that coming from the Supreme Court?
Yeah, and I also think it has something to do legislatively with a couple of fixes that were put in place that have run out of their time. Do you know what I'm talking about, Dave?
Yeah, there's two bills that are going to expire at the end of this year that were put into place to shore up the levy system. And really, the nightmare scenario for me is we get through this session without a fix, but with a patch, with a fix to, you know, shore up the system we have now. And the system we have now doesn't work, and it hasn't been working, and it doesn't make any sense. It's not in anyone's best interest for local districts to have to come up with these levies repeatedly to try and just pay for basic education services.
Yeah, correct. And my understanding also is that if this does not get resolved, then come next September, massive layoffs of school teachers throughout the state of Washington.
So it sounds like we can't continue with levies, but let me just throw this out there. Shouldn't communities pay for their own teachers? Shouldn't communities raise money for their own schools?
Well, the state constitution is very clear that basic education is a requirement of the state. And when we're talking about basic education, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about paying the salaries of teachers, paying for the costs of education. That is a duty of the state of Washington. And so in the McCleary decision by the state Supreme Court,
they said
that this is a paramount duty of the state to fund public education. And by paramount duty, they meant everything else is extraneous. I mean, this is the thing that must be done. And what levies do essentially is it rewards very wealthy communities, and they can pay for great teachers. And Bellingham is one of these communities that benefits from people passing levies. But there are places, and a lot of them are in the eastern part of the state, some of them haven't passed school levies for years, and they cannot compete for excellent teaching. And so those students are disadvantaged.
Mm-hmm. And so we don't have a standard, a basic standard of well-educated students across the state.
Correct. And it's determined to be a basic right of the children of Washington to have an education. And so this is a dereliction of duty. The Supreme Court's been very aggressive with the legislature about this. And as Dave says, the response of the legislature has been disappointing.
And this isn't the first budget year that this has happened. This is the commission was a culmination of a few years where this was put off.
Well, we've had, you know, I think this was the seventh commission in recent, you know, in like of this century that was specifically for resolving the state's fundamental education problems. And yeah, this has been a long saga of real disappointment and kicking the can down the road.
Right. And, you know, State Senator Kevin Ranker in the 40th District of Orcas Island, as long as he has been in the legislature, he's been trying to work this through. And his disappointment is profound because, you know, I think he's now Is he in his beginning his third term, his second term? Anyway, he has been at this a long time. I don't know exactly how long he's been at it, but as long as he's been in office, they've been struggling with this, and it's been a long time.
And just FYI, Kevin Ranker is the senator that covers south parts of Bellingham as well as San Juan, where he's from, and Skagit County. So,
correct.
He's one of our own, and it's great that he's a champion. But when you have people who go away for months and then come back and say, we need more information, what the hell happens next, Dave?
What happens next is we have another session that is where education is going to blot out the sun for a lot of other issues. There's a lot of things that our state should be working on, like transportation, and we're not going to be able to get to them because this is going to suck all the air out of the room. We're probably going to have at least one special session, and we get, you know, just chaos and stupidity.
Yeah.
And so what happens is this becomes an increasingly acute crisis. Then, as you say, transportation doesn't get mentioned, mental health, and we're right. losing mental health funding, doesn't get mentioned. And so this isn't just a situation that affects education. It affects every aspect of governance in our state.
It does. And, you know, I attended a couple of city council meetings, county council meetings, and they may try to make requests to the legislature. They have things that they want to get done, as do all these jurisdictions in the state of Washington, and they've been paring their list down for years because they know there's nothing else to get done but this McCleary decision, and yet that's not going to get done either.
So we'll pay attention and tell you what's up as that develops or doesn't develop. But let's just take a quick look at some of the other legislative issues that won't be as big but are still interesting. I want to bring up the ugly head of bathroom discrimination has come back, as it has across the country. This has become a sort of fallback position for conservatives who have been angered by equal rights and LGBTQ rights and abortion issues and see this bathroom issue as something that they can bring up again and again. So not only do we have a House bill already in place, but there is another initiative forming, and I don't believe it's going to go anywhere. I almost don't want to give it any attention except to say they call it Just Want Privacy, which I think is laughable, number one. Bathroom privacy is not an issue for people, and they are using the scare tactics. They even use phrases like, we don't want men in girls' bathrooms, like what they're trying to do is make it so an eighth grader can't go into another eighth grader. But here's the point. It's laughable. It's scare tactics. But there are laws for people who commit the crime of going into somebody's bathroom for the intent of harassing. And it's not a real issue. The only time it's ever been documented as a real issue, as Washington Won't Discriminate says, is when they sent their own people into bathrooms of opposite sexes last time in order to make it an issue and to get signatures.
It's a wedge issue, and what that typically means is that you generate a lot of fundraising around it. You get money coming in. You get people fired up. You can drive people out to the polls. I think the fundamental purpose of these things is it keeps the base energized.
And on top of that, they know it's not going to go anywhere. And if it was going to go somewhere, I don't think they'd be pushing it so hard, because these discrimination bills have been a financial disaster for the states that have passed them. And I think that just like with education, there are people who have identified that nothing happening is better for them. And that's what they're going for. They can use this as a gigantic distraction
from issues like education. Yep.
And yeah, it's despicable,
right? And it's laughable, and we don't want to waste too much time on it. I just wanted to say it's a stupid name, and let's move on. So we just have a minute left to look, because education is overshadowing everything. Is there anything else we should pay attention to?
Well, on the subject of waterworks, we do have this issue where, based upon the Hearst Act that or the Hearst decision that happened with the state Supreme Court back in the fall, Whatcom County has a moratorium on development rights. This is a decision that affected many, many counties. We call them GMA counties. They're counties that are required to do comprehensive planning under the Growth Management Act. they all are looking for a legislative fix.
Okay, and we're going to get into some details about that. We're going to kind of move more into the county news, but we are going to come back right after this on Cascadia News Now.
We invite you to join us for 60 minutes of music, literature, poetry, and a little humor on Village Book's own
Juggernaut Radio Hour.
On January 12th, the Juggernaut Radio Hour celebrates its 10th anniversary at the Spark Museum, the home of KMRE LP 102.3,
where we held our very first show.
And our musical guest will be Scarlet Locomotive.
We hope to see you there.
And that is happening tomorrow, the Juggernaut Radio Hour 10th anniversary. I invite everyone to come down to Spark around 6:30. $10 for a ticket will support us, programs like us that are waiting to get on the air, and it's a really good deal for you and for KMRE. Now, Tim, you were just starting to talk about some stormwater stuff and some county stuff, so let's get right back into it.
Well, I was talking about this legislative fix that the counties are demanding, and it's not just Whatcom County. Spokane County would like a decision. They would like a legislative fix to a couple of these Supreme Court decisions that have happened, and there's been a series of them. And they all are of a package and a piece, and what they do in tandem is they really restrict the sort of creative capacity of counties to deal with water issues. And I think they're generally good laws and good reasoning that are designed to help water quality and water quantity issues in Washington State, to help with salmon recovery, all of these issues. But together as a package, they are really putting a crimp on local governments and their solutions. This week, they had a decision, Skagit County. In Skagit County, it's almost the mirror image of the Hearst decision that I was speaking of earlier in Whatcom County, where the state Supreme Court declined to hear a petition from a petitioner in Skagit County. Essentially what they did was they upheld the county's position that they weren't going to issue a development right to this particular petitioner because of water quantity issues in the Skagit River basin. And that is essentially the cousin and the opposite of what happened last fall in Whatcom County, where they said, no, the county has been derelict in its responsibility to pair development decisions with water quantity and quality issues.
And Skagit has a similar moratorium in terms of development then?
Right. And so together these decisions, there's nothing inconsistent with them. In fact, they're completely consistent. But the situation is in Skagit County, when Skagit County said, we're serious about this, we're not going to issue a development right. In Whatcom County, they were like, we're just going to continue to issue development rights. So
knowing that they could not actually develop?
No, with uncertainty of whether they could. So the decision last fall delivered certainty, and again, I think that this decision by Skagit delivers more certainty. It delivers certainty that Whatcom is not going to be able to appeal this decision to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has already decided twice now that these are the responsibility solely of counties, whether it's Whatcom County or Skagit County. And then the other big decision that happened 2 weeks ago was a suit from King County and Snohomish County and the Building Industry Association were trying to say that development rights trump things like the Clean Water Act. And the state Supreme Court said, no, no, no. What we call vesting rights do not trump clean water and the state's initiatives to try to protect water quantity and quality.
How about that BIA? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a big decision. It was a big victory for the environmental groups, because what it really did was it established Ecology's rulemaking authority for stormwater rules that they might set up. And it also one of the issues is maybe you applied for a development application back in the 1980s, let's say, and those conditions under which that development vested are still in place. But meanwhile, science has marched on. And so the question was, well,
But you had been legally granted a right. That is, so a developer would say, this is being revoked. I had been given this. and it's being pulled away from me.
Right.
And that's where the challenge is.
But the problem that ecology had was we have all this new science, we have all these new techniques and everything. We need to be able to enforce those and impose those new techniques and those new that new knowledge on new development as it comes forward. And the Supreme Court said, yeah, essentially you're correct. You have that right. The state has the right to impose water quality standards, and development that has not yet occurred but will occur in the future need to conform with that right.
It's interesting looking at some of the decisions that have just come down for Cherry Point that are groundbreaking and landmark decisions, and then looking at how our own state government, our own Supreme Court is really taking the stand that they hadn't taken before in terms of development. This seems really, really hopeful. And yet the sense that I have, at least about Whatcom County, is that some of that is too little too late in terms of our water.
I don't know if it's too little too late, but the trouble is a lot of these decisions were kind of floating out there. And what's happened in the last year is the state Supreme Court has really clarified, brought all that case law together, examined it, explained it. And so there's a consistency now that there may not have been 2 years ago. A lot of jurisdictions like Whatcom County find that onerous because now there's demands on them that weren't on there before. But in some ways, I think it's sort of freeing because there's certainty to action. And you know that if a county, for example, were to impose a new development standard on these vested applications, the Supreme Court would support the county in making those decisions.
So, Dave, do you want to weigh in or take a guess on how this might impact or not impact anybody whose position is up on the county council?
I think we're going to have a pretty hotly contested year. I think that a lot of people are very worked up with what has happened nationally and what has happened locally. I think that we're going to see a few more land grab signs out in the county.
What's a land grab sign?
It's a reactionary movement to restrictions on land use that people thought were unfair.
So is that that's not the same thing as something like make this Independence County? Is that not what you're talking about?
Well, we were talking about wedge issues earlier, and it's kind of a wedge issue. It states a position that is immediately understandable to the people who feel like their property rights are being impacted, and gets them fired up, gets them ready to roll to the polls.
They took our land.
Property rights are the sort of thing that make people nuts. You know, being told that you can't do something that you want to do with something that you paid a tremendous amount of money for and have been investing in, is galling. Even if you are somebody who believes in, the importance of the community and all of this, it's still galling. And I think that, you know, we heard at council meetings towards the end of last year, you know, there's a lot of people who had plans who don't get to, you know, develop the land. The land that they have isn't worth what they thought it was. And I think that that's going to be a big and increasing deal as the year goes on.
Well, and Tim, you were talking about this lawsuit that came from King County and the Building Industry Association. It's easy for somebody like me who leans pretty strongly to the left to see this as those big evil developers, but it could be that people who are getting caught in the crossfire are individuals who have individual packets of land.
Oh, correct. There's no question about that. I mean, in this particular case, when I was talking about somebody, say, in the 1980s that filed a development application, they may have done that as part of their retirement. They're a family, and they wanted to subdivide a piece of property and put a couple houses on it, and that would bolster their retirement. And so it is true that innocence not the word I want, but that ordinary people get caught up in these sort of battles. And I agree with Dave that it's going to be an interesting election for, and not just for that, but for a couple of things that I'll add. One is that we had this district-only transformation that occurred on the ballot a year ago. And as a result of that, some of these people have actually been districted out. Some of the people that are on the council now can't run in their districts anymore because there's been a redistricting that's happened underneath them. And so some of them are going to voluntarily retire. And what that means
is— Can you name names?
I can off the top of my head name names. But what this means is that you're not going to have an incumbent's advantage for some of these positions. On the other hand, what's interesting is because you have district-only voting, the people in Bellingham can run their own candidates, and the people in the county have nothing to say about that. So I have this expectation that what we're going to see is we're going to see some extremely conservative people running for county council
for
out in the county.
Farm areas.
And I think we might see some crazy, crazy liberal people running in the city of Bellingham for county council, and they will all have a roughly equivalent chance of getting onto the council because people who oppose them will not be able to vote for them.
And, you know, I was certainly against district-only voting for many reasons. I like the county council that we have now for the most part. But I have to say, having that diversity of voices creates an interesting council. And maybe that will move us forward as a county in a different way that we can't foresee.
Yeah, I expect that the emerging council from this will be even more polarized. I think it's my personal opinion is that it's very unfair. Some of the things you hear in the rural county that these people don't represent me. They've tried very, very hard. The council has tried very, very hard to represent the interests of property owners and property rights. They've actually gone to the wall. They've gone to the Supreme Court. They just have not prevailed with the Supreme Court.
So, Tim, I know you caught up on, we just have a few minutes left in the show, and I know you caught up on the first city and county meetings of the year this week. And so is there anything else that we should know about or keep our
eyes
on?
Well, I think the only thing that's, I think, you know, the city of Bellingham is going to be another fantastic and interesting election period. I think that one thing is going to come to the fore.
What's up for the city of Bellingham?
Well, we've talked about this, but I think the big thing is they're going to begin to dissect some of these affordable housing initiatives that came up as controversies last year. Those are going to come to the fore in the spring. It's going to get neighbors riled up because this is their home. This is their investment. This is their identity. And some of these affordable housing initiatives are going to challenge some of those preconceptions.
Tim, is this where the phrase neighborhood character comes into play?
Yeah, it is. Cities have, in a technical way, we call them police powers, but they're zoning. And zoning is in place that gives predictability to a neighborhood. In other words, this is a single-family neighborhood. It's zoned single-family. So what is that boarding house doing in my single-family neighborhood? It gets people very upset because that boarding house went in and there was no consideration with parking issues or with other neighborhood concerns.
Right. Looks like you had a final comment.
All I wanted to add is if you're not tired of the phrase owner-occupied, you will be in about 6 months.
All right. Well, it's going to be a lively year starting from an inauguration coming up right after next week's show, and we'll see what happens from there. And I do want to say that we will be touching on, if not the inauguration itself next week, some of the actions and reactions that will be happening locally and regionally. And that is about the time already that we have for Cascadia News Now. Big thanks to my co-host, Dave Willingham and Tim Johnson. And I want to give a special thanks to our engineer, Brooks Collins. Glad that you made it back from Canada tonight. And we also want your feedback. Find us on Facebook at Cascadia News Now. We would love to hear from you. And this is Cascadia News Now on KMRE Bellingham, kmre.org, and 102.3 FM Bellingham.